tell my listeners a little bit about how you have come to this story. I know it's generational, so tell me.
Sure. Okay. Well, the first thing that happened was I did a Bachelor of Audio, and to finish it, you had to do a capstone project. And I had for quite a while thought about my father's story in him growing up in Germany during the war. And so I attempted to make a film about it, but COVID hit. And then I actually, what I did create was a podcast. And by doing that, I found out so many stories I had never heard my father tell me. And all of my siblings also were fascinated. And it made me, when I realized that after the war, which was really violent and upsetting for him, he wanted to come to a new peaceful country. And it was totally luck of any kind that he came to Australia, because he really wanted to go to America. And they just said, no, America's full. How about this country? And he said, well, where even is Australia? So he didn't even know. And so by charting that, I realized that he went through the Camp Bonegilla near Albury-Wodonga. And so when the podcast was released and I won a few awards in America, I thought, well, maybe I could connect with the camp and do some more interviews like this. So I went up there, and they actually had hardly any recordings or anything that had been kept. And I thought this was a real a shame, and something that history needs to have. So because I felt this is a huge missing piece in how Australia has eventually become the nation it is, because actually, just to put a little footnote there, they had been accepting migrants, and I guess their policy was only from the British Isles. And so they hadn't even thought about these other people. And so it was actually because of the war and the displaced persons, the fact that the communists had taken over so many countries, and the refugees just couldn't go back there. So Australia did sign on and take on these refugees. So that's why Bonegilla is a bit like Ellis Island in America, where that's where the most of the migrants came to, and then they were farmed out to various places, because most of them came on a contract. They would pay for the ship over, but you had to do what they jobs they found you for the next 2 years, which is a story in itself, because some of them came out as scientists, as musicians, ballerinas, whatever, and they were told at the camp, look, we know you guys have faked all these certificates you have, so you're just going to do what we tell you. And just like the story of Dr. Carl, his father was quite an intellectual and ended up driving taxis. And there was quite a lot of resistance from racism and putting them down, calling them dirty. And look, you know why this story, even though it's historical, it's actually kept circling around like a broken record to right now, when they're saying, oh, these overseas migrants are bringing in crime, are bringing this, that, and taking our jobs. And so in a way, my documentary wants to say that even though we've learned a lot, we're still replaying the old stuff, and even to the point where the war was the reason for them coming over. And look at all the wars we've got. There's going to be more displaced people. And in fact, my father thought that from the total destruction that he saw in Berlin, it was flattened. There wasn't a glass pane even intact. He thought there would never be another war like that, that everyone would understand. But it's not the case. So anyway, once I'd gathered quite a few interviews of people, I started to realize I wanted to do something with it. And so I came up with this idea of a live show where I have two screens on stage, one giant screen, which is the interviews, second screen, which has their home movies, their photographs, documents, and then I play on stage with a grand piano and a string quartet. Well, we've been selling out crowds all around Australia, because the migrants and the fact that it ripples right out, where one in every 15 people have a direct link to the camp, that people just flocked to it. Because if they weren't a migrant and wanted to listen to what the show was about, they were relatives of migrants who had never heard the story. Their parents had probably passed away, or they wanted to understand, well, what did my parents go through. And for them, they've been saying to me, you've filled in so many pieces. And I think because it's so emotional, there's a lot of tears, and yet there's also joy because I mix in some funny stories as well. You know, these people are so resilient, and they're a real inspiration to us all, really.
Well, it's interesting. I was aware of Vonnegut because I've heard stories from different people. The people who used to run Discurio, which was a very highbrow sort of record shop in Melbourne, they were. He spent 2 years building railways when he first came here. Anyway, so they used to talk about things like that. So I was aware of this stuff. And the other one that I was aware of was how the people there, they were great cooks and they thought Australians were just the worst cooks. They couldn't believe how bad they were. So we've got a lot to thank them for, I'll have to say, on a whole lot of
Oh,
levels.
definitely. In fact, there's quite a few stories in there about the cooks and some real funny stories, you know. I don't think that this will be a sad story. It's actually, it weaves horrific things to with funny and very inspirational things. I think that's why it's getting such an audience.
A whole lot of things that you've just said that make a lot of sense watching this film. One of them is just how horrific war is, and you take it straight to on the ground where people are actually experience or they experience these things. And a couple of the older women, they actually say it out loud and say, "It's taken me 70 years to be able to talk about this because it was so terrible."
In fact, that's quite a theme here because a lot of these people never told their children, and they never shared it. And so some of the children would come with me just to make sure that it was okay with the older person, and then they would say later, "I never heard that." So just like I did with my own father, these people say to me, "I never knew that. What? How come they told you?" You know, but I think I have a real thirst and knowledge for this, and I just want to. Any little rabbit hole, I'll go down it. And I think this is a real testament too to how you relate with your parents too, because sometimes at the shows, I get people who say, "I wish I would have asked." That is probably one of the most common things. I wish I would have asked, and it's too late now. It's gone. So that's why it's quite critical for me to keep getting these stories because, you know, in 5 or 10 years, this generation will be gone.
I'm a little bit freaked out by the communal silence that Australia seems to have. I mean, it's not just reflected in this story, but the deafening silence over Indigenous experience. I mean, there's something going on that needs to be unravelled about Australian connection to history, besides the history that's put forward by the state.
Oh, exactly. I mean, as an example, even though my father came over from Germany, he met my mother who had German background. And as an example, they went to the Lutheran Church, which is predominantly from Germans and Northern Europeans. Where my mother lived on the Eyre Peninsula, the pastor would do the morning service in English. But in the afternoon, because some of the older, well, they had migrated at an earlier stage, only spoke German, he would do the service in German. And the authorities said, "You got to stop that." And he said, "No, I'm doing this for the community." And they put him in a concentration camp. So just like you're saying, there are real blockouts of some of the things that we've done to, you know, minorities. And I mean, some of those sound bites. You know, like before movies back in the day, there'll be that little black and white, you know, newsreel of the week. And one of the things I've got early on is a guy saying, "Should we trust these people coming in from overseas? They're dirty, they're low incomes, and all this." And you think, "Oh, how could you hear that?" But I mean, I've actually now made a second version. I'm working on it, and there's so many more stories like that. But what I found was the migrants were so, I guess, in a way, forgiving, and they just went with it. I mean, nowadays, some of the names that they were called and the things that were done to them w would be against the law, you know. But these guys went through it, and they were very resilient, you know. They really were.
Well, as the older lady said, she saw a lot of dead bodies when she was walking along, and she was only a kid. I guess being
Exactly.
called a few names probably pales into insignificance.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Part of this story is this, and your film, because it's moved from being an audio to, and you've obviously got a great facility for creating media spaces, because I love the idea of the two screens, because there's
Yes.
a difference between people's home movies and then a constructed, and these two things are so compelling. But you go and find a whole lot of footage, which was really fascinating, for archival
Yes.
footage. So that must have been a big adventure for you.
It was. Yes, it definitely was. I mean, amazingly, my dad had a Super 8 camera. So some of this in his time, when the wall came up in Berlin, he was actually living, he went back to Berlin. And so this, some of it is actually from my own. And I guess the time at the start of the film when he talks about them calling us kids Nazis. Well, that's me riding the bike there. So yes, you try and get as much as you can. And I'm still amazed that some of these people have come back from that amazing, horrific war, and they still got little photo albums. And so for them, that was a precious thing to carry around in their bags. So all those photos are from the people that gave them to me, you know. And in fact, some of them said, I haven't looked at these for 50 years, and they pull them out. And it's just a time capsule back. And I love seeing those old photos because they just are amazing. And some of them, you could take that person out and put them today, and the fashion looks exactly the same, the haircuts. It's great. Yeah, they really were lovely people.
But there's also other footage. You've got footage of
Yes. Yes.
German soldiers, and
Yes.
but the shots that you've chosen are really fascinating because they're street level shots.
Yes, correct. Yes, so there is a there some of them I bought from Periscope Films and so on, but others were actually available on what's called the Internet Archive, and they were uploaded, and they're actually free. So yes, it did take a lot of scouring and finding, and yes, you're right. What you see appearing on the screen, on one screen in the show, it's actually there'll be two screens. So it's quite yeah, it's quite a multimedia thing. But I think what I find at the shows too is some of the people bring along little teddy bears that they had, or postcards or photos. That they almost seem to think that it's not just a show, but it's like a connection with other people that went to the camp, and then to show me, like for some reason I'm the guru of Bonnie Giller, but I'm just
You've become the repository.
exactly. But I would have to say that I'm probably the person that is getting the most interviews, no doubt. I'm over 50 now, 50 interviews in, and each time I do a show, I ask, can more of you come? And next thing afterwards, the people will send me letters to say, look, I went with my grandma, we cried, we laughed, but she would love to be interviewed. But I did have another situation where a guy who ran a radio program, it was an ethnic program on at Aubrey, so Aubrey being right near the camp, I said to him, could you play this on your ethnic Austrian German radio station? And he said, look, I'm going to play it, that's fine, but I don't agree with any of the things that you say. We should never dig up the war and dig up the past. It's horrible, right? But anyway, the funny thing was that he listened to the six parts of the podcast, and he rang me back up and he said, Simon, I have to say sorry. I've listened to everything, and you really treated them like human beings. You weren't sensationalizing anything, and you let them share their stories. And he goes, can you interview me? So I felt fantastic because I'd turned somebody that was shut up and wasn't going to say anything, and he had that cathartic moment of saying, I want to tell. And he said he felt so much freer once he'd said those stories to me. It's For me, this is a holistic thing that's just trickled out from the film. It's just it seems to be bringing families back together because some of them have wondered, well, why is my dad or my mum so grumpy, you know? And they didn't realize the PTSD that they'd gone through and how that affected their life. So some of these people that come to the film, they go, now I can really understand why my dad was like that and why he didn't want to say anything. And he might have been sitting in dark rooms or not connected with us. They then said they went back to these parents and said, we've seen this thing, we really understand.
Funny you should say that, because I was talking to somebody else because I'd been watching your film and I told them about it last night. And they are married to a Maltese. They're young people,
Yes.
and they're going to go to Malta. And she was saying that that both grandparents on his family were horrible men. Like, they were horrible men. And we both agreed that this may actually have come from the fact that they had terrible experiences during the war.
Yes, in fact, there's quite two Maltese in there. But when I think about their island being under siege and having, I think it was
Starvation.
4,000 raids of bombers, I don't even know how they survived. But they were tough people, and yeah, it would change you. I mean, my dad even talks about seeing piles of bodies, and I'm thinking as a young kid, how did he do that? Because even I remember some of the horror scenes from a horror movie, and they've stayed with me for the rest of my life. But that was on a screen. He saw it in real
This is
life, you
real
know?
life. Yeah, real life.
Oh.
And it's actually very salient for people to actually go and see films like this to realize that war is no good. It's no good.
No. Well, I think what we're seeing nowadays. There's two things happening, I reckon. One is the way the kids play the video games, it seems very, you shoot, and next thing they come up again, and it's on. But if we see what, say, for instance, is happening, say America bombing the Iran nuclear facility, you only see this satellite image and then just a bang. But possibly underground, hundreds of people are dead, you know, and flames are going everywhere, and you don't see that on the street level, like you said about those German troops. So very, very, I think people need to revisit what's the use of war, you know, what's the point? Because I think they make it clear in this that there is no point, you know?
Yeah, there
And
is
they're
no.
actually, my dad actually now is having flashbacks when he sees things like the Gaza destruction, Ukraine. He said if he especially sees children with,
Oh.
say, teddy bears, or a little blanket, or holding on to their mum and dad. He goes, I'm back. I'm back in Germany. I'm back, back there. So he sometimes has to switch it off, you know.
Now, it's going to be shown on 25th of July at the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival, 7:30 at Cinema Nova. But there's something else that's pretty extraordinary about this. You're going to play the soundtrack, you know, the music soundtrack live with a
Yes.
piano and violin. That's a really extraordinary
Yes.
thing to do.
Yes. So as I say, at those shows, I do it with a string quartet, and I think that really adds to the emotion because a lot of people say they'll see the orchestra and me sitting there, and then they forget all about it because they've been consumed with the show, and then all of a sudden they look over and go, "Oh, that's right, that music's actually being
It's
made
real.
right there." So what we do is we look at the screen and we react to their. What they say, what their emotions are, nearly half of it is improvised, so it's different every time. But in this case, I thought, look, I really want to do what is I guess my forte is doing that, playing that music there. And also, there will be a Q&A at the end, and I'm bringing some of those people from the film to answer questions. So I'm amazed that at the end of the shows, if any of the interviewees are in the crowd, people line up to get their autographs. I've made superstars out of them. But the flip side is that, unfortunately, because of their age, some of them have passed away,
That's
and
right.
that brings actually a very hushed exhalation from people who go, "Oh, I fell in love with Nancy or Adolf, and now they're." gone. Oh, so I think the idea, until I watched it at the end, I hadn't sort of connected it. But you do, you fall in love with each of the people, and you go, oh, I've shared their life in a certain way, and I'm connected to them, you know?
It's a very human film. So thank you very much for spending some time talking to me about it. And I'm really glad you made it.
Thank you. Yeah.